and Patricia Camilleri, Director of the Communications and Alumni Relations Office here at the University of Malta. In this series called Research Matters, I shall be discussing the many research projects undertaken by the university's academics from all fields of study. Well, I'm always very pleased to have on Research Matters, to have students on the programme, and this is one of those very nice occasions. This morning in the studio with me are Rodian Caruana and Randolph de Battista, who are both LLD first year law students. And that means that they already have an LLB under their belt and are now working and studying to become fully fledged lawyers. They've joined me today to talk about the issue, the important and very topical issue of child law, which they have been discussing with their lecturer, Dr. Ruth Varuja. And I'm looking forward to hearing about the credit that they've been doing with Dr. Varuja and about the interesting initiatives that this study has actually spawned. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Welcome, thanks.
Perhaps we could start off by putting this credit in child law within the context of your studies in general, because it's interesting to know, for listeners perhaps, to know where it fits in with the rest of the work that you've been doing.
We actually have compulsory study units, and then we get to choose other optional credits, such as child law. These optional credits are more focused on specific topics, specific aspects of law. One of them is child law. It's open for all the students interested in the field and who are thinking of specializing in the area of family law and even child law. We get 2 hour lectures every week, and then we are assessed at the end of the semester. We get to organize a debate, which I'm sure we will talk about later on. And also we have an assignment where I have to put our proposals in the light of the European Union year for combating social exclusion and poverty. So that's interesting as well. With regards to the aims of the credit, it's basically about to have a better idea of the issues that the child faces, all the issues regarding the children's rights. Issues such as the right to participate in decisions which affect them directly. For example, when the child faces the situation where his parents are going for separation, what are the rights of the child? And also other areas such as policy making within the country, decisions which affect the children, how do we get to know what the children want to say, and how do we have structures within the state which allows the children to talk and say what they need. Also, and a very important topic is the best interests of the child. Usually when there are court cases, the judge always specifies the importance of the rights and best interests of the child. But what are these best interests of the child? Only we adults define what are the best interests of the child. And I think that's a bit ironic as well. All this is incorporated in the United Nations Charter on the Rights of the Child, the Convention on the Rights of the Child, which Malta is actually one of the countries which ratified this convention.
What is the definition of a child? Because, of course, children at various ages are probably able to participate or not, according to their age. But that does it cover anybody under, what, 18?
Under 18 years, yes. According to the law, it's every person, every minor who is... A child is a minor who is under the age of 18 years.
And does a child have the right to have a lawyer like other
theory,
like adults do? Or not?
In theory, yes. In practice, it's a bit different, in the sense that there is, for the entire Maltese population, there is only one child advocate, and if my parents, if I'm a child and my parents are separating, I can't go up to a lawyer and tell him to defend me. It's either the judge himself who assigns the child advocate, either or during mediation, the mediator, or if one of the parents asks for it. Basically, the child has never has got a say.
Oh, that's sounds very dire, doesn't it? Obviously, one presumes that, as Randolph was saying, about that the best interests of the child are going to be taken into account by the various parties involved in the case.
In actual fact, there's no definition at law what the best interest of the child is. It depends on the judge. For instance, for a judge, it could be that the child, for instance, a child of 13 years, I think, would have an idea of what he thinks is best for him, but the court most probably won't even hear him. For instance, the child can decide that the ideal would be for him to stay with his mother, but during the court case, the judge can decide the opposite.
And they're not asked? Not automatically asked their opinion?
According to our laws, if you have 14 years of age, depends on the section of the law, because there are discrepancies. For instance, Section 1 through 1, subsection 4 of the Civil Code obliges the court to hear both parents and the child if the latter has reached the age of 40 years before making those suggestions which it deems best in the interest of the child and the unity of the family. However, Section 6A of the same code grants discretion to the judge to hear who have attained 14 years of age.
That's interesting.
And it's about the same matter in the sense that the second section I mentioned relates to parental authority. The former relates to the establishment or change of the matrimonial regime, the matrimonial home, which incorporates in it the parental authority.
So there's room for flexibility, to put a positive gloss on it.
On the other hand, there's the Office of the Commissioner of Children. Which is making a lot of improvements in this area. It needs more resources to work, obviously, but that's a positive move we have made in the past years, in recent years, actually.
What do you feel were the main issues that were talked about within this credit that you did, both from the side of the lecturer, what was put forward by the lecturer, and also things that sort of came up in the discussion during the credits? What were the main features?
Basically, first of all, for the first time, the credit was open to the general public. So we had a group of people. Initially, there were about 20, I think. Later on, they lost interest or something happened, and we reduced the number. Who all come from different backgrounds, but if I'm not mistaken, all have worked in this area in some way or another, or through a porch, or through the Memorial Fund for Daniel Delicata. So it's not just, we didn't just speak about law as such, it was more like a...
Experience sharing.
Yes.
And we had a more practical side on how... even organizations working with children actually are affected by the law. So it's interesting in that sense.
Yeah. That should have been interesting. It sort of widened the scope, shall we say, of the discussion. Definitely.
Even for our students, it wasn't just theory, you read the laws, but you see in actual practice the problems people who are trying to help children are facing because of the laws that there are.
Mm-hmm. And even the mode of lecturing is different, since it is a more concise group. Even the way we mentioned Dr. Ruth Farrugia actually delivered the lecture with various group works within the lecture, it was very interesting. The issues mainly were what are the rights of the child, but we talk about it a lot, but actually in real fact, what are we doing to safeguard these rights? And that was the whole idea, and obviously the need for one law incorporating all the rights of the children, of child.
And what came out about regarding the codification of the law here in Malta, though? I mean, you've mentioned perhaps one or two things so far. Is there other aspects of the actual law itself that were discussed?
No, what we mentioned is the fact that in Malta there isn't one set of laws which regulate. There isn't one you can't go and look, for instance, for a child law act or children's act. It doesn't exist. You just have pieces of legislation which relate either directly or indirectly to children scattered all over different codes.
In other countries, did you do any comparative work to see what other countries do? Because one can imagine that the reason for this, that there isn't one particular law I know about, trusts or like there are, or NGO legislation or something like that, is because it's grown in a sort of rather amorphous way, and that it hasn't been actually, it hasn't been started and finished all in one go. In other legislatures, how is it?
There are codes. There are laws incorporating all the rights of children, and actually in Malta it's being drafted, so that's a good move. It has been drafted
for
but yes, that's an important point. And more often than not, when we talk with professionals in the field, they want this law. Also for them to be regulated when they are working with children. And that's an important point. Another point is, if we have one law incorporating all the rights, it is enforceable in a law court. Whereas the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child, which we are a party to it.
We have ratified it, but you can't use it in a court.
You can't use it in a court.
If you go, you quote a part of the UNCRC, United Convention on the Rights of the Child, in a law court, the judge can tell you, but we're not, you can't enforce it. It's not enforceable. We have ratified it.
But because it's not actually part of our law. So
we are part of it, we have ratified it, but we can't enforce it in the only legislation which incorporates everything, we can't reuse.
What needs to be done for it to be enforceable? Is there an action that needs to be?
This law would solve everything, would solve this issue more than everything, because if you have one right, which is not being safeguarded, then we can enforce it in court. Obviously, we need more support to the child advocate, because then it would be more a better way in order to safeguard all the rights of the children.
When we spoke before about what are the issues, you mentioned the obvious one of children involved in separation cases, which is obviously something that comes to mind immediately. Are there other situations that you discussed that were different to that? I mean, issues, say, of education, or later on perhaps we'll speak about poverty. What were the other issues with regard to children?
We spoke about the right, but it always relates to participation at the end of the day. Because if you're speaking about the right to children to education or the right to health, in theory, in the ideal world, we all say children have the right to health, to education. You mentioned it. We all think every child should have it. But at the end of the day, the question is, how much is the child actually involved in the decision? For instance, if after primary he wants to go to a church school and not to a state school, or the other way around. For instance, he wants to go to a state school and not to a church school because his friends probably went to the state school. How much say does he have?
Very little, I would imagine, in that particular.
It depends very much, I think, on the family at the end of the day. For instance, many parents, even in class, we have brought the issue up, since we have the outsiders, sort of, not students, who have children. They tell you, I know what is best for him, in the future he'll appreciate it. But why should you, in my opinion, force a child to go to a church school, for instance, and not with his friend, and probably he will not do so well because he won't be happy. Speak a lot about the future, but the child is interested at the end of the day in the present. He wants to know now what's going on.
Would you say that it was a positive experience having the so-called outsiders, in inverted commas, within your class, your lecture, because one presumes that they were older than you and had a little bit more, perhaps, life experience than you have.
Yes, definitely. Furthermore, we have foreigners as well, from different countries, so you see their point of view, which is quite different from ours. They are more independent. Even as when you hear them speak, even as children, they tell you, I find no objection if my mom, when I was, for instance, 4 years old, went to work and left me at home alone. They are
different culture.
Yes, they are more independent.
Well, that's certainly one of the big advantages and one of the reasons why the university, in fact, does encourage international students, because of that mix. That's really great. And this is one of those credits where there was obviously a lot of discussion.
Yes,
discussion going on.
It was a very different credit, which I would and recommend to any student, honestly.
That's great. And you mentioned the fact that you're going to be organising, you had your assignment, first of all, and then there was also the organisation of this debate. And I know from previous years that these debates always provoke quite a bit of interest amongst people on campus and other students. So I would imagine this will be no different. And certainly the title of the debate, which is Child Poverty, Do We Really Care?, is intentionally, I presume, provocative and therefore guaranteed to raise the interests of people on campus. What about that?
That's the whole idea behind it. Even in lectures, when we do presentations in the lectures, we tend to provoke the discussion, and that's the whole idea behind the debate. It's going to be held on the 13th of May. It's open to the general public as well, so we hope to see a lot of people there. And there are a lot of people invited who are specialists in the field. The persons invited are...
we're going to have four speakers mainly. There are Joe Gerada, Anthony Aruz Dacelis, Dr. Martes Portelli, and Donan Seiker. Kurt Sansone will be the moderator, and there will be other distinguished guests in the audience.
But this is Child Commissioner,
and
also members of APOCH.
Members of APOCH, other student organizations. It's open to anyone.
What will be the main points, the main subjects discussed by your special speakers?
We'd like to focus mainly on issues such as education, health, child participation, and unemployment, the minimum
wage.
The minimum wage, and see how it goes.
And everything with regards to child poverty, again, in the light of the European Year for Social Exclusion and for Combating Poverty and Social Exclusion, we want to give our proposals for this to combat these problems, and we hope to present also our proposals to the Social Affairs Committee of Parliament. So we're looking forward to it.
Normally, one associates sort of poverty, you talk about child poverty, you think of India or some other third world country. You don't necessarily think of child poverty in terms of Malta, because we have in general a pretty high standard of living. But clearly poverty can also have a very wide meaning. So I presume that the idea of poverty is not even necessarily just material poverty, but poverty in the wide sense. Is that so?
Obviously, it's poverty is not the stereotype we normally associate with poverty. Since the standard of living is better, there are issues which include, for example, internet. Is internet a need nowadays more than a want. So is a family without internet considered to be poor in that sense? And also, there's another issue in education. For example, in a recent study conducted by Father Charles Tabona and Dr. Angela Abela, they conducted various interviews with teachers and also with parents of the students in class. And one example was that they interviewed the teacher of a refugee, a student, a refugee. And the lecturer said, the teacher, that he's not interested in class. When I give him research, he's the only one with no homework, with no background research. When they actually interviewed the parent, they found out that they live in a state where they don't have a computer. They don't have the means to do the homework. So what we think...
we take some things for granted which shouldn't be taken for granted, but basically. Mm-hmm. For instance, a teacher usually... I don't want to generalize, but for instance, for a teacher, nowadays, as far as I know, when you start the year, they give you a list. You need, for instance, a project book, cover it in brown paper, put on pictures. It's okay. I understand that the teacher needs to work, but you have to understand that at the other end, there are people who you don't know what are their backgrounds. For instance, for a parent to buy actually a project book would mean having to reduce the cost from somewhere else.
With regard to internet, I heard recently on the BBC that one of the Scandinavian countries has actually created the idea of access to internet being a human right. And I think this is one of the things that mm-hmm. you were mentioning. And I think it's an important point there, because obviously that was in the sense of for everybody, not just for right. children. But certainly the internet has become so pervasive that mm-hmm. it's become almost a need, as you say.
We have huge cities in France and other European countries where the government has provided free public internet, free Wi-Fi all around the city. And these cities are huge. They are much larger than Malta. So we can move along those lines. So that's another proposal there.
What about student participation in the debate? Do you think all your students who are in the lecture will come and turn up? They'll participate?
As the number of students who actually take the credits, we're quite few. We're about 9, I think. But we've been promoting the debate around the campus and even beyond, and hopefully we will have a good number.
And when you get your LLD and Rodion, and you go out there in the workplace, are you interested in following up this kind of law yourself?
Yes, this is one of my favorite areas, family law, but I'm more into the child side rather than, not family law. I like family law, but child rights are what I'm interested in.
And you, Randolph, or something else grabs your interest?
I like the area of civil law, so it's wider. But yes, I'm interested in the subject. And I'm also interested, for example, one of the topics we discussed was children in alternative care. And I'm particularly interested in that area, so yes, it's interesting. Yeah.
What exactly is meant by alternative care?
Children who do not enjoy family environment, but are sent to another institution. Maybe a church institution or even a governmental institution. What are their rights there? Their participation in the decisions which affect them, the way they are, the way they live there, the way they are given pocket money for them to buy their own things. if they can buy their own things. So those issues there, that's very interesting.
Can I imagine? Well, I certainly thank you both for coming on the program, Research Matters, today. I wish you luck with the debate, which I think we should say is happening on the 13th of May at...
At 10. From 10 to 12 in the common room, student house.
In this common room at student house. That's great. And we invite everybody to turn up and participate and listen. And I wish you both the best of luck in your future careers as well.
Thank you so much.
I do hope you can join us again next week for another edition of Research Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.